Small businesses are the cornerstones of our local communities, and small business owners are hardworking and passionate people who are chasing down their ambitions while there's a lot on the line. So, let Verizon champion your small business dreams. Whether you own a small business, are scaling one, or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon, well, they've got your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/StarTalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/StarTalk today.
Welcome to StarTalk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. StarTalk begins right now. Welcome to StarTalk Radio. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist. And I'm with one of my favorite co-hosts, Lynn Coplitz. Lynn, welcome back to StarTalk.
Thank you. I just have to tell you, I'm so mad at you.
Why?
Because I didn't get to be on the football show.
Well, excuse me. I got football peeps out there.
Yeah,
I gotta
because I'm a chick. You didn't think I knew anything about football.
Well, okay, next time.
Meanwhile, I walked in and asked who was playing in the Super Bowl.
Next time, for the Spaghetti Bowl, we'll invite you for that one.
Thanks, Neil. Are you calling me fat? Okay, what's the show about today?
The show today is about cosmetics, the chemistry and science
of
cosmetics.
So I'm here for the chick show.
That's right. Well, I thought maybe, you know, have some expertise about cosmetics. Did you know that cosmetics derives its name from the word cosmos?
Of course I did. Everyone knows that. You mean cosmos like the cocktail?
They all share the same common Greek word origin, cosmos with a K, and it means sort of order. And so cosmetics has been used since ancient times to rearrange a person's experience.
Really?
By appearance, yeah, yeah. Is this what you do with your cosmetic? You rearrange your appearance?
No, at this point, I really don't care. This is what you look like when you start giving up.
Is that right? Apparently,
but I used to do that.
Apparently, Neanderthal wore makeup. We have evidence of that.
Why? And they still couldn't make themselves look better?
Well, that's our representation. What we've never drawn. Have you ever seen a Neanderthal
How
drawing?
How do I make brows smaller?
They all had unibrows back then,
exactly.
For sure. So they have lumps of red ochre and black manganese has been found in Neanderthal sites from 50,000 to 100,000 years ago. And these are things that can change the color of your skin.
Interesting. So I guess they use that probably to tell. I mean, it's funny to say that they used it to attract, you know, Neanderthal men. It's not hard to attract them even now.
It's just funny. I'm trying to picture a Neanderthal with makeup on. It's somehow counter to any concept we have of them.
I would think they have so. I just never thought of them having time to do that.
Well, you know, the most famous
hunt and gather seems to be priorities on Maslow's hierarchy of needs there.
I think the most famous of all, like, famous people who used a lot of makeup was, of course, Cleopatra. Cleopatra, like total makeup babe, right?
And dude, and I love the Elizabeth Taylor Cleopatra when it's like 60s looking. There's apparently a lot of extra blue eye makeup. And why was that? Why did Cleopatra?
I don't know. If it's available to you, you know, the Egyptians was a pretty advanced civilization in its day, and they're very into their looks, and they buried people with all of, well, if you're royalty, of course, they buried you with all of your belongings, but also all the things that made you look beautiful. They try to preserve that. And so we look at that as, oh, that's weird, but of course, that's what we all do today.
It's true.
You know? So, do you know, I interviewed two cosmetic chemists.
Although we don't do that and paint it outside someone's casket.
We don't.
A picture of them with the full eye makeup up, full drag.
So I gave a talk recently at a cosmetics chemistry conference and really? Bumped into a couple of cosmetic chemists who I couldn't resist. I said, I got to get them on Star Talk Radio. They're two professors of chemistry at Fairleigh Dickinson University in New Jersey. And one of them his name is Art, because right name, George Alice, and Steve Herman. So cool. Let's just see what they have to say about it. And we'll get back to this whole show on cosmetic chemistry here on Star Talk.
Interesting.
What is your philosophy? Is it to
Buddhism?
Is it to make people better looking than they are, or to prevent them from looking worse than they should?
The first aspect of cosmetics was simple products that do basic things, wash your hair, so that it's clean. Simple things that like hand creams that just take dry skin and make you feel a little bit better, and functional products that everybody hopefully uses, like antiperspirant and soap. So it starts.
Okay.
It starts.
Again, it's true. When I put on my deodorant, I'm not thinking chemist. I'm really not. I'm just thinking I don't want to smell today.
But you're thinking not only what a cosmetic chemist does, but in the case of an antiperspirant and a sunscreen, of an OTC drug. So what we do.
Over the counter drug.
Correct. So what we do is sometimes cosmetics, which are not regulated by the FDA that way. And sometimes we make products that are regulated. You can see that on the label. When you buy a sunscreen, they will have active ingredients followed by the other ingredients. Same thing when you buy an antiperspirant.
And that's okay, so FDA doesn't regulate it because we don't eat it, at least not supposed to eat it.
They do regulate both cosmetics and drugs.
FDA regulates cosmetics. I didn't know.
Absolutely. Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act is what we're governed under, but they leave cosmetics off of the agency name because it's sort of one of the little minor players.
Are you suggesting that if you come up with a new shampoo, it needs FDA approval?
Absolutely not.
No.
So then what are you saying?
We're saying that the shampoo, the manufacturer is required by law to prove that to have data that the shampoo is safe for the public to use.
Oh, okay. So it's
they're responsible for the safety, but the FDA would monitor it if there were a question about it from the public or from some incidents that might have occurred.
And clearly it's easier to demonstrate the safetiness of a topical product than one that you ingest and has to interact with you chemically.
Yeah, the testing is less I shouldn't say less rigorous, but less extensive than you would have to do for a drug product.
You know, these are two professional cosmetic chemists, and they're talking their trade. And, you know, this beauty thing's been going back. We mentioned the Neanderthals with makeup, and Cleopatra. It's also references in the Bible. Jezebel is one among them.
Yes, it says that she was anointed with perfumes.
Yeah,
And, you know, there's also a big thing in the Bible about, if you think about it, the wise men brought frankincense and myrrh, and those were all perfumes. And
myrrh.
Perfume was a big thing in the Bible. There's always this thing like, and then she poured oil on Jesus's head,
right.
And Jesus was like, she's the only one who gave me her smelly oil.
Yeah, I mean, it's all there. I mean, it's not that I've ever smelled myrrh before. I have no idea.
I think they were stupid gifts anyway, if you want my opinion. Bring some soap and a blanket, you idiot.
It's the things you really need, or diapers.
If you're really wise, man. How about something for the donkey?
So,
who's been dragging this poor lady around.
So over the years, what we've learned is that cosmetics attempt, with the way people use them, they try to exaggerate what you are as female in contrast with who you're trying to attract. And sometimes it's a features like contrast between the color of your lips and the color of your cheek and your eyes and this sort of thing.
I think that's really interesting. I was reading that because men don't have as much of a contrast as women usually.
It turns out, I wouldn't have thought so until I sort of read up on this, and it turns out to be true. There's certain sort of fundamental differences between men and women in their appearance, and then we'd use makeup to try to exaggerate that so that you can stand out better.
This is the difference between me and Neil. Neil read up to see it was true. I went online and Googled women in drag, and then looked at like Hilary Swank from Boys Don't Cry.
Oh yeah, yeah, when she played a boy, basically.
Yeah. And what they basically did was powdered her lips down. Like her lips were really and it was really bizarre to me. I was like, what do you know? That's true.
Yeah. In other words, the Hollywood folks, whether or not they know it explicitly, they certainly know implicitly that that's what they got to do to make.
And throughout history, I guess that's always been true. Women have exaggerated, like, and the dark. I guess the dark red lips mean a youthful.
And now it gets exaggerated with surgery, right?
Right. Oh, and Queen Elizabeth. Remember that thing I read about?
Yeah. What was it?
That she made her face white, and then she would paint blue veins so that she looked transparent.
That's creepy.
Transparent and creepy.
Yeah. So other things, they're drugs with cosmetic applications. Did you know that there were eye drops given to people who had glaucoma? And what they found is that those eye drops had a side effect where they grew longer and thicker and darker eyelashes. And it's now approved by the FDA for cosmetic use.
I just have pictures of someone going, oh, Grandma, I'm so glad you can see. And look at those lashes. Don't you look so fawn-like, Nana?
You look hot, Grandma.
Look at you, Nana, with those big blinky eyes. That's. I think that Latisse, but then there. But now the concern is that aren't they changing eye colors or something?
Well, yeah. So yeah, but it turns out it also makes your eyes darker. So that if you had blue eyes and you really liked your blue eyes, they'd get darker. But then you'd have reduced effects of glaucoma. So that's your choice.
But they don't turn your brown eyes blue.
No, they don't turn your brown eyes blue. No. And of course, there's the famous Botox.
Oh.
It's a neurotoxin.
Oh, do we have some sort of music that goes da 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 da?
It's from the bacteria Bacillus botulinus, and
whatever, which means terrific.
So what it does is it paralyzes the nerve endings where it gets injected. Do you know anything about Botox, Lynn?
Oh, you're such a jerk. You know I do. I get it all the time. I would get it right now if I could get it.
So what part of your anatomy do you stick it up? Do you put it in?
Stick it up. That's nice, Neil. I hope your family.
Well, okay. I ask because you hear about it getting used in the face, but I recently learned that Hollywood folks who are going to be on the red carpet, they get it injected into their armpits. To prevent sweating.
Yes.
You don't have wet spots underneath.
It's for people who have that perspiration problem or going through hot flashes like I'm doing, but I wouldn't do that. To me, that's way too vain. I just have it shot right in my face.
Just in your face.
Yeah, and it paralyzes your face, and you really can't use facial expression as much, which I don't think it's all that cracked up. I don't think facial expression's all it's cracked up.
It's not. Let's go back to my interview with, in this case, we focus on Steve Herman, a cosmetic chemist from Fairleigh Dickinson University, and we'll just get some background on how some of these products were developed. What's this one I see everywhere, Polysorbate 60? What does that do and what is it for?
Polysorbate 60, Polysorbate 20 are surfactants or emulsifiers.
I was going to say 20, too.
You can say 20. And if you had hours and hours, we could go into how that actually came about. And it came out of World War II. There was a company called Atlas Chemical Company in Delaware that was making explosives out of mannitol. And a thing that was left over was just piling up outside the building. It was sorbitol. And
this is the byproducts of explosives.
Explosives. We sent people to Germany as the war was ending, scientists, because we wanted to know what kind of science Germany had during the war. One of the people came from Atlas Chemical Company, went to Germany and found out how the German chemists were making chemicals water-soluble using something called ethoxylation. He came back, saw this big pile of debris and said, oh my God, if we ethoxylate this, we're going to have products that have detergent properties. And those were the first surfactants that were synthetic chemicals that were used in personal care.
Wait, so you said a lot of words in there. Let me just unpack that. So, a lot of chemistry words.
A lot of chemistry
words.
Okay,
so surfactant. What is a surfactant?
Okay, let's take all this chemistry and reduce it to one magic molecule. And let's go back to something that everyone knows, Italian dressing. When you take a bottle of Italian dressing, you have two layers in it.
And the oil and the vinegar.
And when you use it, you shake it before you use it because that shaking temporarily mixes it together. But you can buy creamy Italian dressing, which is...
My preference.
Which is all mixed together.
It sticks better to the lettuce.
Something
Don't tell me you put glue in it so that sticks better than the other stuff.
Something that you put in it changes it from being two separate phases, which is in a regular Italian dressing, to one phase, which is called an emulsion. And you use emulsions all the time.
So one phase, that's your fancy word for one density.
Well, yes, you've taken two things that are incompatible and you've married them.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there, Lynn.
There's a lot going on.
And Lynn, I was browsing your website recently, lynncoplitzcomedy.com.
That's right.
And did I see what I thought I saw?
Yeah, there's me getting Restylane and Botox and Perlane. Restylane and Perlane are fillers.
But these are your beauty secrets. You're letting your people realize this?
I'm just letting them know that I'm real. I'm keeping it real now. But they can see it. It's a video on there.
It's a video of you getting Botox. Yeah, and what are you getting injected in your skin?
Restylane and Perlane are fillers.
Fillers.
Yeah, they're things like what they used to use it was collagen. Now they use Restylane and Perlane.
Oh, okay.
They're apparently better for you.
So this fleshes out parts of your face that would otherwise be sunken and
wrinkled. It builds
wrinkled.
Them up. It's called a knifeless, facelift.
When we come back, we'll talk about lasers and how you remove scars and what role NASA has played in all of this. In a moment.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And StarTalk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Talk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson with Lynn Coplitz, my comedic co-host. Lynn, you're here for our special show on cosmetic chemistry.
So it's the cosmetic industry is not only about the chemistry, it's about the mechanical things one can do to the body. And lasers, well, you know, all about LASIK surgery. It fixes your eyes so that you don't need the glasses and the contact lenses. And generally people believe they look more beautiful without glasses. And so there's lasers making people beautiful. What do you think of that?
I don't wear glasses, so I, you know, Neil,
you
I just care
with?
About things that affect me directly. but I do think it's a little weird to do that. I think most people look fine with glasses or contacts.
I feel the same way, actually. Sometimes even glasses can even be sexy, you know.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. And, of course, they use lasers for hair removal.
We grew up in a hot for teacher time. That's why.
You know, Einstein wrote down the first equation that enabled lasers, and I'm just wondering
is
if you said
true?
It is true. It is true. Not widely known.
And he clearly didn't use it. He was a hairy little mess.
But I just want to say, I'm inventing lasers so that we can have LASIK surgery one day. It's interesting how you can invent something and I have no clue where it'll turn up later on.
I just wish we had that when I was a kid because we didn't have hair removal, and I'm Italian, so I looked
so you
like
got
a little
hairy
monkey.
Places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my mother would let me bleach my mustache, so then it was just kind of a light
a blonde mustache.
Tom Selleck kind of looking thing, yeah.
Tom Selleck mustache.
A nice, thick magnum mustache.
So, also, they use lasers to remove scars and stretch marks and tattoos, because what it does is it vaporizes the upper layer of the skin, and then the skin grows back afresh. And so, it can reduce the effects of discoloration
so
and the rest of this.
Speaking of stretch marks,
yeah?
did you ever hear about how
I've never had a stretch mark.
The Strivectin?
No, I don't
Do
know,
you know
what
that
is.
That's
no.
a cream that they use for stretch marks.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently somebody smacked it on their face. It worked so well on the stretch marks. They said, I'll see if it works. So they put it on their face, and it did. And now they sell it in Sephora and stuff to remove, fine lines from your
I
face.
Didn't know
and
that.
My Botox guy said, oh, yes, it works very well. So guess who's getting that today?
Today?
Yeah, on my way home.
You're getting stretch marks cream on your face.
Yes, and people use hemorrhoid cream on their face, too, to reduce puffiness.
Women do this. This is crazy.
I think it's just hilarious that someone's putting it on their butt, and they're like, oh, this works well. Hey.
What an idea.
Those puffy things under my eyes.
My butt and my eyes?
What else is puffy?
One of my favorites is, again, the role of NASA in nanotechnology, which is trying to make things as small as possible and still make them useful and effective. And so in sunscreens, it turns out if you turn sunscreens into sort of nanoparticles and layer that on your skin, then it's not this sort of goopy, greasy surface coating on your skin. What happens is the particles are so tiny, they actually get into the nooks and crevices and crannies of your skin surface. And it has properties that resemble what light does off the surface of the moon. And so you can correspond.
Oh, that's interesting. That's
right. So the software that they used at NASA to understand light reflectivity off the surface of the moon was applied to anti-wrinkle cream with nanoparticles and how they would then interact with the light on the texture of your skin.
That's interesting. And I think that's what they're doing a lot now with mineral makeup.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I don't know if you know about it, but it's where you can mix it. And then they say you can even sleep in it and it's great. It fills in the little
just
lines
part of
on
your skin,
face,
right.
And it becomes part of your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is a lot of it is reflective.
Yeah.
So now that's why people are wearing a lot of the shiny makeup, because they say that it reflects the light and it
so
makes
you're
you
sparkly.
Look
yes.
It makes you look youthful and dewy.
Which is a big driver of cosmetics from the beginning. How to make you look youthful. And did you know that they're female astronauts, perhaps the men as well, but we don't see those, female astronauts on board space station are also use makeup in the morning. whatever their morning is, that they'll put it on.
Well, I'm sure. What if they actually bump into an alien or something? You want to look your best.
I'm just saying, you know, you'd think maybe you'd leave the makeup at home, but this has to be NASA-approved makeup so that it doesn't, like, outgas or turn, you know, do weird things for you.
That really would be funny, though, to be overly made up in the space helmet.
And it's not only just things that make you look good, there's things that make you smell good, too. One of my favorite recent advances is they're trying to make a perfume that contains oxytocin.
What is that?
Oxytocin, you know, that's like the drug that
like
makes...
OxyContin? Like a drug?
Yeah, well, it's related. It's like the one where you trust another person.
So you could put a perfume on that makes people go, all right, you can have my handbag.
Well, I think they would be after other things if this is the perfume that they're wearing. So what they're trying to do is create a perfume.
Like a roofie perfume?
A perfume that chemically changes how two people react to each other. It's not just, oh, you smell good. It's, wow, I really want more of you.
I thought that pig semen perfume or pig sweat or whatever did that.
I missed that news cycle, if that's what
they were using, like some sort of gland from a pig, and apparently it did it.
It also did that.
It was like pheromones or
something.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, this is what drives it. And so back to my interview with the cosmetic chemists Art Georgialis and Steve Herman.
Interesting.
We talked about the safety and concerns of cosmetics and also a little bit about perfumes. Let's see what they say.
I worked for about 38 years in the fragrance industry, specifically doing fragrance applications. So my
fragrance applications? What does that mean? Like, I know there's a simple way to say that. You stick nice smelling things into other things.
Oh, of course.
Well, why didn't you say that? Right. Yeah, doesn't sound right.
Does not sound right. When people think of fragrance, they think of going to a store like Bloomingdale's to the perfume counter and buying something like CK1.
They used to chase you down. They don't do that anymore.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore. But much more perfume by volume goes into things like Tide and Downy. The biggest consumer of perfumes is Procter & Gamble, and they go into laundry detergent. But another thing
I didn't know that. So my clothes are smelling fresh and clean. That's one place all this fragrant research goes into. That's what you're saying.
Exactly. Another thing is if you watch people shop, let's say for shampoo, and just watch a consumer going to buy shampoo, what do? They open the cap and they smell it. They don't think about how it cleans their hair. The signal to buy comes from the nose.
So this dabbles in aromatherapy, right? I mean, I've smelled products labeled as aromatherapeutic, and they smell much deeper to me than other things that also smell good.
The cosmetic industry, well, the perfume industry specifically, defines something as aroma science to describe the emotional and physical effects that fragrance can have on us.
Okay, so it could be for any fragrance then. How about the fact that when you smell something, it can trigger a memory from decades ago?
Well, that's called the Proustian hypothesis.
Oh, now I understand it.
Is that Marcel Proust?
That is Marcel Proust.
Proust, okay.
In Remembrance of Things Past, there is a long description of the memories evoked by the smell of a madeleine, a French pastry. And that's given its name to all of the emotive, the memorial of fragrance.
That's cute.
Another example, let's say the smell of skunk, which many people don't like.
Many
people.
I would say 100%.
It is not 100%. My wife likes the smell of skunk. She associates it with visiting her grandmother in Pennsylvania. What they would drive from New Jersey to Pennsylvania.
It's an associative smell.
Absolutely. Yeah. So her smell of skunk reminds her of her grandmother, and it brings back a happy memory. So some things are learned. If right now I had put the smell of Chanel No. 5 on you and punched you in the face, the next time you smelled Chanel No. 5, you would
have an association, yeah.
Or I would assure you that would be the last time you ever did that to anybody.
It doesn't disprove the science.
It doesn't disprove the science. So, Lynn, you're from the backwoods. Did you use eau de skunk?
No, first of all, I'm not from the backwoods.
Well, you're from some wood. Where did you grow up?
No, my family lives in Virginia. It's hardly the backwoods.
Compared to Manhattan, I would think so.
Okay, but the smell of skunk, I just like that he's like, my wife would like the smell of skunk.
And Chanel No. 5, do you still use this? Is that
yeah,
right?
And I wear it partly for that reason, because it reminds me of my mother.
Oh, so it's an associative memory.
It reminds me of my mom, and also because every time I'm around men, they're like, that smells really good, and it's because it reminds them of their mother.
Oh, So it's not only what cosmetics smell like, it's whether they're safe to use. Let's pick up a clip on that.
The products that you get from the cosmetic industry are safe and effective. there are consumer groups, because there's so much misinformation on the internet, who have what they call an anti-chemical bias, and they think everything that has chemistry on it is going to kill you, and it's a big conspiracy.
So my best friends are made of chemicals.
Absolutely. And these anti-chemical groups, while there are safety issues...
So they're like the chemistry version of PETA.
Correct. And there are anti-cosmetic activists trying to make laws. The fact is the industry has been extremely concerned about safety forever. The fragrance industry is specifically very concerned about safety.
Yeah, but it's not because they're altruistic. It's because they would go out of business, right? Well, I don't believe it's because they really care.
They want to keep their reputation up.
Right.
Also to forestall any more stringent regulations or more...
Oh, so they police themselves, basically.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. Otherwise, somebody comes after you.
A lot of industries are like that. They, mm-hmm. they want to make sure that they're maintaining safe and effective and quality sure. products because, again, it's good business. And it prevents or slows down the increased regulatory constraints that we mm-hmm. might have.
Yeah, I mean, safety matters in everything. And what's the cost of beauty is what this is all about, you know? And after the break, what we're going to do, we're going to talk about how the ancient Egyptians used lead-based makeup. And
isn't
what
that effect, would that kill them?
It would, but they wouldn't have known that. In fact, they didn't even know that the element lead, you know,
at least
was...
they died looking good.
When we come back, we'll talk more about animal testing and how that can be circumvented because of technology. This is Star Talk Radio, special show on cosmetic chemistry. Not cosmic chemistry, cosmetic chemistry. This stuff goes way back. And of course, there are some health issues that you should be concerned about. For example, if you go back into the 19th century, there was this belladonna. You ever read about belladonna?
It was poison, right?
It was not as originally used. It was a juice that they used to drink. And it makes your eyes sparkle, your pupils dilate, and your cheeks go flush for having consumed it. And these are they're considered signs of attraction because, in fact, the name beautiful...
Now it's called ecstasy.
and if you translate belladonna, what do you get? You get
beautiful girl.
Beautiful woman. That's right. And it's also known as deadly nightshade. And it has toxic qualities. And an overdose causes death. So it's beauty or death, you know. It's one of these things.
Oh,
you know?
And that's really weird. So if you don't take an overdose of it, it just makes you look pretty?
Yeah. And an overdose, you're dead.
But then everybody gets gluttonous. You know, and I want to be prettier.
And there's also, did you know that that oxytocin, that chemical that makes people trust each other, this has been found as a fundamental part of the prairie voles. Do you know about these? Some of them.
Sure. They
you don't watch the Animal Planet?
I was just going to say, whatever. It's a little dog that runs around in the prairie.
There's the monogamous prairie vole. Like they find a mate and they stay hitched for life. And what we think is going
on. What is that? Is that an animal?
A vole, an animal. A prairie vole, yeah.
Don't say vole like I'm supposed to know. I don't know what it is.
It's an Animal Planet. Everybody knows if you watch the Animal Channel. I'm just saying there's a kind of prairie vole that is monogamous. And it's monogamous their entire life. And when you study what may have enabled that, what they find is that the release of oxytocin and other chemicals can allow them to be addicted to each other. We think it's an addiction. That's what the oxytocin
provides. That makes me sad. That means we're going to take their little glands. Right? That's what it means. That's what it means. I'm telling you right now, someone's going to cut open that little prairie vole and get its little thing that makes it monogamous.
Maybe they can make it in the lab. But with regard to animal testing on cosmetics part, that's been a hot topic.
Because it's been done for years and it's really hideous. Like,
so what they're trying to...
bunnies in the eye with mascara.
Right. So what they're trying to do is shift away from animal testing. And so, for example, L'Oreal, the company, mm-hmm. they designed a new chip that simulates the behavior of skin cells when you've put makeup on it. And it eliminates the need to test out allergic responses in other little pets and fuzzy creatures.
What? Bravo, L'Oreal.
Right, yeah. And so the chip contains a layer of cultured human skin cells. And it allows them to recognize whether there's an immune response or whether you have an allergic response based on the reaction of the skin cells on this chip. So that, you know, that's where that plays.
What does it mean, Neil, when it says that something's, I don't know exactly what this means, when something is hypoallergenic. I mean, it doesn't mean that, I know it's it means that it's better for people with allergies, but it can't mean that it won't hurt you. It just means that it's really when they've tested it, it's worked well on people.
Yeah, exactly,
with
exactly, exactly. Well, okay. Or test on whatever forces there were. We've okay. got a good clip where we've got my two favorite cosmetic chemists, the only two that I know. They just talk about what they do and how widespread their efforts are in culture and in our beauty.
What the consumer is looking for are really drastic changes to their skin structure that's happened because of age, and they'd like to reverse that. But reversing that is actually a physiological change. You're changing the structure and function of your
biochemistry, right?
Right. So you know you're tailing into the drug area, and you'd have to basically do the studies to show that was both safe and effective for performing that function.
But there are things that we can do that don't affect your skin that still make you feel better, look better. There are optical properties that when you have a wrinkle on your skin, it's actually a shadow. It's where you see it because it's a shadow. If you can lighten that area optically, you don't see the shadow and you don't see the wrinkle.
Well, that's just makeup at that point.
No. It's
masking technology.
It's a little different because the shadow is there, but also as you grow older, your skin color changes. Skin in young people has a greenish-blue color component and a red color component. As you get
Is that old, like white people's skin? I mean, whose skin are you talking
white
about?
White people's skin.
Okay, thank you.
Being a
okay.
white person,
people,
I'm stick
yeah,
with
people
that.
Equals white people. Okay. When I was a kid, the Crayola, you know. They didn't call it pink, they called it flesh. I said, what flesh are you talking about? What? Okay, so go on.
Well, okay, so us white okay, people so have these two pigments. As you get older, the reddish-blue one fades away, and you look redder.
Which, that's why older people, they look redder.
They are redder. They literally
They don't just look redder, they are redder.
They are redder. Now, you can now take a particle. You can make it reflect light, and then you can make it actually iridescent, and you can engineer that color so it reflects out a bluish-green light, which counteracts that reddish appearance. You've not only made the wrinkle go away optically, and you've changed the color of the skin to make the skin look younger.
Because subliminally, we associate the other color with younger people.
Exactly.
It's amazing what these guys are thinking about. I mean, I don't know if it's kind of creepy, actually, that somebody's put that much brain power into what's going on your face. Lynn, are you happy for this?
But you know I do a lot of TV stuff and everything, and I've studied all these little makeup artists, and one of the best things they say is, like, when you put bronzer on, to always put really bright pink blush on top of it. Because then it looks more youthful. Otherwise, just the bronzer will make you look older.
So it's all about trying to look young.
Mm-hmm.
We got another clip where we talk about the effects of smoking and sun exposure on how old or young you can look. Let's see what my favorite chemists tell us. Go.
The worst things for your skin are the sun and smoking. We know that.
What does smoking do to your skin? I never heard that.
Oh, smoking is terrible. If you look at smokers, their skin gets like tremendously wrinkled. And I hate to say it's about chemistry. It's about the free radicals that are in smoke. It affects, like, the collagen.
So it's the external presence of the smoke, not the fact that they inhaled it, that affects the skin.
Oh, correct.
So how about people who hang around campfires? Same problem?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Well, so campfire people have messed up skin, is what you're saying?
Yeah, if you do it all your life. And then go to look for...
And barbecue people tailgating football games. They're going to have bad skin.
Well, the amount of hours that they really spend doing that, Neil, would not be significant.
Like a chain smoker.
Yeah, not like a chain yeah. smoker.
Oh, so a chain smoker is immersed in the cloud all the time. I gotcha.
So let's go back to the sun. We know the sun is bad for you, and we do make sunscreen.
I happen to like the sun, but okay, well, but all right.
You have some natural protection, Neil.
Right, okay.
We know the sun is bad for you. It breaks down DNA. The sunscreens that we make, and they have SPF, they have drug claims on them, and we know that by either staying out of the sun or by wearing sunscreens, that you are definitely preventing a lot of damage, external damage from your skin. And there's two kinds of aging. There's aging from the outside and there's aging from the inside. It's called extrinsic and intrinsic aging. That external aging from assault from the environment, from smoke, from sun, from chemicals that are in the air, the cosmetic industry can help protect you from. So that, as a preventative thing, is very, very real.
So in a way, it's like a cosmetic force field.
Yes.
Where you're protected from assaults on your beauty.
Correct. So that's the number one thing. Number two,
probably the bulk of the products that get sold.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a huge market. Number two is
sunscreens in regular daily products now, protecting.
It's in lip balm. Yeah. You know. Yeah, exactly. I remember when it showed up. It's like, oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The next thing we can do is halt some of the damage that the sun is causing. The sun creates a cascade effect, damage that leads to other damage. And by using things like antioxidants, we're able to stop that cascading effect and prevent, you know, the damage from spreading as far as it could. So there you see a lot of products that have vitamins in them or antioxidant claims, often from botanical products.
Now, what I think you might be able to do is to send people into space, and then gravity is not dragging on your body parts. You know, have you looked at the skin of astronauts who've come back? You have.
Yes, the effect of being in space is the same as the effect of natural aging on the ground, on skin.
So it's no different.
No, it is accelerated in space. The added effect that you get from being in space is equivalent to what we get aging here. It increases wrinkles and degradation.
10 times faster or 5 times faster? Do we know? It's hard because they don't spend that, you know, they're only a few months in space.
Right. But we know it has a bad effect on the skin because, look, you're in an environment where things like humidity are different than they are in the Earth.
Yeah, I mean, the sun is, you know, you got to love the sun, but it's gonna mess you up as well.
And see, I come from a time, like, I was raised in Florida, and my mother would literally roll us in, like, lather us down in baby oil, plain old baby oil. No,
before you went out to the
before I went to the beach. If we got the sand on us, we looked like chicken cutlets. We would literally, and we would play all day in that. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, it's going to affect me.
And that was not a protection from the sun. That just oiled you up.
It basically just greased it's you up so you could go cook.
You could get fried.
Yes.
Well, of course, it's the ultraviolet light from the sun that interacts with your skin and makes you dark. And, of course, that's what gives you skin cancer. But they have these tanning beds for people that don't want to wait for the sun or go to the beach. Did you ever use tanning beds? What do you use?
Oh, really?
I'm asking. I don't know.
I'm right up there with Snooki and the rest of the gym. Gym laundry tan. I use tanning beds. I use them all the time. And right now, the tanning salon by my house closed.
Uh-oh.
And I've been feeling very pasty.
That's why you look kind of Casper-like here.
Yeah, thank you. And but I started taking vitamin D because I saw this thing on Good Morning America where they said if you're not getting sun, that you have to take vitamin D.
We've got to take a quick break, but more Star Talk when we return. This is Star Talk Radio. Welcome back. You know, there's a whole industry behind creams that will change your skin color, make it lighter, make it darker, get rid of dark spots.
And I buy them all.
So, Lynn, if we took away your cosmetics cabinet, Lynn, what would you look like the next day?
Neil, I look just fine.
Well, then, the way you talk about it, I don't know.
I just have a lot of lotions and ointments. But now, look at my hands.
They're orange. Why do you have orange hands?
Because when you use self-tanner, if you don't put gloves on, which I absolutely don't, and you don't use, like, a scrub to take it off immediately, your hands will get darker.
You rub self-tanner on your body?
Yeah, all the time.
Or just the parts that are exposed?
All the time. And every time I rub it in, I think, I hope this isn't carcinogenic.
We got to call my guys and find out.
Could you?
Yeah. So we have another clip where we talk about just what goes on with all this skin color changing. So these guys, like I said, are not only worry about things that make you beautiful, you know, makeup and rouge and all the rest of this, but just things people do just to completely change who and what they are. And it's kind of scary, I think.
Well, they also control like antiperspirants and stuff too, like things that make you stop sweating.
That, all of this. It's kind of the power that they exercise over what we look like is extraordinary. That's so let's find out what they say about sort of ethnic products and skin lighteners. And of course, they'll come the dangers of tanning beds.
Ethnic products. I learned the hard way. Don't use a black girl's hair stuff.
Let's find out.
Now, since you pointed out that you're not a white person, there's a whole
range. This is a radio audience, so we have to clarify that.
There is a whole range of things that then happen because African-American hair is different from Caucasian hair, and the products have to be made differently, the treatments. Makeup has to be different colors, and one of the products to straighten hair, it has very severe chemistry. So the ethnic care products are a specialty within the personal care products that we make that go to the special needs of these other markets.
So anytime I'm on TV, of course you go in the makeup room. It's funny, when I walk in, there's a whole other box that they slide over into place that has the palette. The palette that would serve my skin color.
And those products, what we would call ethnic products, which were basically a small little industry on their own, about 10 years ago, those companies were bought up by the giants like L'Oreal and became then part of their mass market operations. Mm-hmm. So that changed from being sort of a little neighborhood type of product to being part of the multinationals.
Plus, that would help mainstream it, I guess, if you're part of the bigger force.
Right, the market really grew, and they saw an opportunity there. Mm-hmm. And they bought, as Steve said, a number of those bigger companies. Afro-Sheen, I think, was one of them.
I remember. I used that back when I had a afro, big afro.
And another example of these kind of products are skin lighteners, which are very popular in the Asian market, where there are societies that identify lighter skin with upper class because the workers were out in the sun and the rich people were inside. So an upper class person, if they add a lighter skin tone, and we have products like that. There are drug products that are used, and there are botanical products that are used as skin lighteners.
So there's never a point where you say, this is crazy. What are you guys doing? It's like, just be yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Nobody's satisfied with being their self. They want to change their hair color, their skin color.
Yeah, but you're like enabling that, right? Yeah. Suppose you said, you guys are crazy.
But then on the opposite side, you have the white people who want to be dark, and then you have the tanning salons, and you have the...
Yeah, so tanning salons, does that... I assume they have the right wavelength of UV
they're terrible. They're one of the most dangerous things, and probably they will end up being banned. They are the worst things ever for people's skin. They will give you cancer.
But why hasn't that been rampant already, or is there a time delay that'll show up?
It's happening.
Yeah, these guys are on it. These guys. I mean, they're telling it like it is and how it might be about these tanning salons, you know.
Listen, I'm stuck still on the ethnicity thing.
Oh, yeah?
I just want to know what it is that makes, like, black women not age. Like, Oprah's, like, 400 years old. She doesn't look one bit different today than she did when she started. And I watched her in Color Purple the other day on High Def. And she's not that pretty in Color Purple. But not a line on her face.
Not a line on the face.
Not a line.
And even Eddie Murphy's joke that black people really don't have the acne problems that the white people do.
They don't have acne or backne or any of that horrible.
Backne? Ooh.
White people get backne.
Let's go back to my guys and see what they say about the future of cosmetics.
In the near term, there's a lot more involvement of the biology scientists in skin biology and also genomics.
So beauty from within.
Not only beauty from within, but also understanding what the components are of having beautiful and more youthful looking skin. So there's a lot of research being done there to understand the genomic, what part of your genome is controlling how you're aging. So there will be eventually products to forestall that, even to reverse it. But then we talk about how are those going to be marketed? Will they be medical devices, or will they be cosmetics, or will they be topical drugs, or even ingestible drugs? So there's a lot of interesting things coming up in the future, all coming out of that skin biology.
And the long term?
The long term, I think, is really the manipulation, maybe, of your genes.
Long term is a face transplant.
Well, that's a possibility, too, but,
The face transplant has been done already.
I thought I remembered a news cycle where that was the case.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would be the ultimate of cosmetic surgery, I guess.
If you want to change the way you look. I mean, there was a Humphrey Bogart movie that was the whole thesis of changing the way he looked in order to escape prosecution. And so they thought about that all the way back in the 40s. And but now you're right; it is a reality. But would you really want to change your face, or would you really just want to have?
Given how much surgery some people have on their face, that's what they're doing. They're changing their face. Right, look at Michael Jackson.
Talk about surgery. Lynn, you're friends with Joan Rivers.
I am.
You got to love her because she's just so upfront about all that goes on with her looks.
She really is. She actually came to one of my shows and she said, "Listen, whenever I laugh, I'll hit the table so you know."
Is this the Botox that's in her face and everything?
She's making me laugh. She's one of the funniest, most wonderful people I've ever met.
You've been listening to Star Talk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson. And as always, I bid you to keep looking up.